Dearly
beloved. Yes!
Get in.
Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera.
Dearly beloved, we are here to celebrate the joining of Reading and the FA Cup semi-finals. We've done it. We are there. Arsenal await Steve Clarke's brave men. A mighty win over Bradford sees us into that last four for the first time since penicillin was invented and various other historical quirks. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of the Tarlow's Den, and welcome and thanks for downloading the Tarlow's Den podcast, episode number 54. All of the reactions to that FA Cup night to come. But before that, I'll introduce who's in the studio tonight, starting with Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
It's upgraded to a studio. You said this on Twitter earlier as well. I don't wish to pull back the curtain too much, but we're not quite in professional recording studios just yet.
Come on.
We haven't got any of the money from the FA Cup run.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're listening to this and you want to upgrade us to a professional studio, please email thetarlowsend@gmail.com. Joining us are no Westie this week. He's away. He celebrated his birthday at the weekend and he's still recovering.
Recovering from yesterday. It must be a long celebration, to be honest.
Yeah, and why not? He's earned it. Mm-hmm. But we've got two of the best possible substitutes. Starting with Mr. Dave Harris, who's in handbags. Hello.
Good evening.
And joined by Rob Langham as well from the Two Unfortunates. Rob, hello.
Hi there.
Both of you racking up the appearances. We're going to have to start paying you soon.
Too right.
Actually, the better I mention pays. I don't pay Johnny either.
No. Pay as you play. No, not even that.
Cup of tea. What more can you ask for?
Per 10 appearances, I think that's the way we should do it.
Yeah, you'll get your Tarlow's Den podcast testimonial soon. But gents, thanks very much for joining us tonight. And after a season where we've pretty much had misery and underachievement to talk about, tonight we can celebrate. We're going to have a positive show tonight because, as mentioned, Reading are at Wembley. We've got that date with Arsenal on the 18th or the 19th of April to look forward to. And we got there in some style, gents. I don't think I'm alone in saying that it was a bit easier than I thought it was going to be. Instead, Reading going 2-0 ahead early doors, then Bradford going down to 10 men in the second half and Reading finishing things off. It was just a bit easier. Was I the only one feeling a bit uncomfortable stood there waiting something calamitous to happen? Dave, I'll start with you.
No, because there's been a history that's littered with calamitous happenings, isn't it? No, it was rather comfortable, wasn't it? As Bradford turned up, played their usual game, which led me to feel incredibly confident about actually winning the game because it played right into our hands. Anytime we come up against a team that plays direct football with two big scrapping centre-forwards, I'll always lump money on Reading, to be honest with you. It was easier than I expected, but not an unexpected result.
Rob, what did you make of it?
Well, I thought it was comfortable as well. We had such an effervescent start to the game. We really got in with the tackles. We were passing the ball around. We were quick. We were pacey. We were so committed to it. Got the two goals. And like Dave, I was really confident because for Bradford, there was no Jason McAteer to come running through the midfield. There was no Nathan Dyer. There was no Don Goodman. You know, I just couldn't see the calamity happening because...
John Stead, ex-Premier League footballer.
Who always scores against Reading.
But as Dave said, I think coping with... I mean, I detected in the first game that I went to that it was all about the long ball. And, you know, and it was the same. And that was really their only tactic. And that was meat and drink for our centre-back. I thought.
Johnny?
Yeah, you know, you said about the long ball, and I actually thought they caused us a few problems in that first leg. I think Stead and the other talker, Hansen, you know, at times they were just muscling Pearce and Hector out of the game, and I did see sort of in the first couple of minutes someone went up for a header with Pearce and gave him an arm in the nose as if to say, yeah, I know, I've read the news.
That was Hansen.
Yeah, and Pearce reacted as if to say, well, I'm still on the pitch and I'm not bleeding. And yeah, you know, I mean... they dealt with them absolutely fine. And, I mean, you know, I wrote the report and I really did struggle to actually think of anything Bradford created, even in the second half. Hansen had a header a couple of minutes after we scored. I think it was after we scored our first and it was just straight at Federici and that was it.
And that was just literally it. That's all they had. They barely had a shot on goal.
I made a quip on Twitter before the original tie saying that I would have to name an award, a positive award, after Hal Robson Canoe. should he fire us to Wembley? I don't know whether I should honour that because he was only one of three goal scorers, but one thing you can't knock Hal for this season is he scored some important goals, and tonight might have been the very most important one of all, nodding us in front, early doors, sending the home fans, say wild, and really setting the tone. And said minutes later, Gareth McCleary scores as well. A bit of a deflection, a bit fortunate on it, but you take them however they come in a game like this. And I said Bradford just, they couldn't find a way back. They pushed us deep towards the end of the first half, but as you mentioned, in terms of goal efforts, not a lot. I mean, was there ever a stage where you thought they're going to come back into this?
They almost reminded me of a Nigel Adkins side.
Good
lots
shout.
Lots of sideways passing, lots of, oh, let's probe down this wing, oh, we can't go anywhere, let's go back through the midfield, let's go back through the defence. And they just didn't really seem... It was sort of like watching Reading up against a team that's defending a lead. If you sit in two banks of four, they couldn't do anything. And quite frankly, they just could not get anything going, even with the long ball. They got in behind once right at the end of the first half, and Federici, to be fair to him, had to be alert to make a save because he had nothing else to do for 40 minutes. But no, I mean, you know, Reading were always in control, always comfortable. I guess you always did think, well, what was it, 5 or 6 years ago, 2-0 up against Aston Villa, and that didn't exactly turn out the way we all hoped or expected. But I never really felt as though that was going to happen. And it was only a matter of time, really, especially after the sending off of the third goal, that it was confirmed.
Dave, the signing of Nathaniel Chalobah has not been universally loved by Reading fans. A lot of fans have questioned why he was brought to the club. You know, what more does he offer than Oliver Norwood? I think last night, for me, went a long way towards answering those questions, because I thought that was one of the most impressive central midfield performances from a guy in a Reading shirt for a long time.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I as you know, I wrote the assessment of him after the Cardiff game, I think it was. It's absolutely clear that he's insanely skillful. He's so cool under pressure with a dropping ball, with two men around him. He'll quite happily just knock it into space and invariably get it absolutely spot on. He's strong in the air. He's very good in the tackle. His passing ability, I mean, he put some wonderful passes in yesterday. It's certainly the best midfield performance we've seen this season in a Reading shirt, possibly for two seasons. And if we can get him on loan again next season, I don't think we'll ever sign him permanently. Apparently, his money is insane for a youngster. But if we can get him on loan next season, then brilliant.
Rob, who else stood out for you last night as really making a name for themselves?
Well, I don't think a single player let themselves down. I thought it was very impressive all around the field. I thought Danny Williams got in a lot of good tackles and was basically harrying them for the whole game. Jamie Mackey has been magnificent for the last few games. I mean, he's got end product as well. I mean, a wonderful ball from Chalobah through to him for the third goal. I mean, absolute joy to watch. Pearce and Hector both very good at the back. Really, it was like a fantastic all-round display of what every player came out of the game with credit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Johnny, anyone for you standing out?
No.
I see Jamie Mackey's getting a lot of love from the Reading fans.
Yeah, I've got to take it back. Said a couple of months ago, or even just a month ago, Mackey, no end product. But in the last month or so, he's completely turned his game around. And you have to say, Clark is, you know, he's comfortable to play him up front now because he's not just stuck out on that wing. He was out on the wing in the first leg, but in the replay in the last few games, he's been playing him up front and he's been scoring goals for fun. And whether it's confidence, you know, obviously he's had a kid in the last few days, so he must be on a high from that. But I think it must be the confidence and the fact that he's just got a lot more freedom now. And he's always been that fan on the pitch, the guy who will run, chase down 40 yards to close down the goalkeeper just to get a few smatterings of applause from the fans. But now he's added finishing to his game. I mean, I think he had a looping header that the keeper had to do well to save as well. On this form, if he could have carried this through for the whole season, he'd be player of the season, absolutely no doubt. I still think he's definitely in with a shout with that, because as we see towards the end of the season, you tend to remember it more than the start of the season. The only question is, can we have him again next year, and can he keep it up for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I certainly added a maybe a zero or two to his price tag over the past month or so. The one really controversial incident of the night was the Bradford red card. I was had a ear in listening to Reading Berkshire as well at the game, and they were saying it might have been a bit harsh. Gents, what did you make of it?
At the time, from my angle in Y25, I thought, yeah, it was very harsh, but having seen it on TV replays, clear cut.
And the thing is, the referee pulls out the yellow card at first as well, and then I think he hears something from his assistant, sort of says, yep, okay, and then he goes to the red. I agree with that, but I thought it was very harsh at first, and I think you know, you could almost see that by the fact that the ref got out the yellow card. But you know, it was studs up into the side. Today's modern game, that's always a red card. You can talk about 20 years ago as much as you like. It might have just been a yellow or even just a ticking off, but you know, in today's circumstances, he had to go.
What did you make of Mike Jones's performance in general, though? Because I've got to admit, I wasn't his biggest fan. I don't think he got the tone of the game right.
Indifferent.
There were a lot of different. 28 fouls, I think he gave.
Yeah, the style of play particularly from Bradford leans itself to just creating infringements. But I don't think 28 fouls. But whether they were all correct or not, I don't think they were at all. And he missed a hell of a lot. There was a lot of grappling, a lot of pulling here, there, and everywhere. It's about what you see first, and he didn't always get it spot on.
Before we move on to the events at the end of the game, just a quick word on Phil Parkinson. Obviously, a man still very much loved by the Reading fans. A lot of Philip Parkinson ringing out from the standard. Parker, give us a wave. He didn't give us a wave, which upset me greatly. But, you know, a man who's come in for a lot of publicity recently. He's done his reputation a world of good in the last couple of seasons. But, Dave, I know we were having a chat just before we went on air about his managerial pedigree. After these two games, is he a man that you'd like to see in the Reading hot seat anytime soon?
No, to be perfectly honest with you. I love Parky as much as the next man. 100% wholehearted, committed performer on the pitch. His championship record managerially is pretty poor. Not necessarily his fault at Charlton, but at Hull he was almost hounded out by their fans. It's a very simple, direct style of play that gets found out the higher up you go, that his sides implement. I'm not sure I'd want that to tarnish his reputation at Reading. I really think he'd be far from my first choice.
You only have to look at someone like Stuart Pearce to see how things can go so wrong and you can completely ruin your reputation.
Yeah, I was going to say, Rob, obviously you've got a bit more experience and you speak to a lot more fans across the leagues. What have you made of Phil Parkinson and his journey so far? And do you see him ending up at Reading?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I thought his comments after the game last night marked him out as a real gentleman. I thought he was very sort of sporting in defeat, which
yeah,
I thought was
agreed.
Great credit to the man. I think he's a great man. But I think I would tend to agree with Dave and Johnny. I think his record is patchy, and as they've said, higher up the league, you know, like Charlton in particular, I think, you know, he's less successful. And I think he did well at Colchester early on. I think he can motivate a team for a cup run or for an important game. But I think the style of play would worry me. I think we have to move beyond that now.
I think maybe though it's a case of the resources he's had. Obviously, Bradford not a lot of money to spend on an awful playing.
They were saying that they only have 16 first team players. I certainly heard that on the BBC coverage when I came home last night. Did a rewind on BBC One to watch it back while I could. And they were saying that they only had 16 players. So that side that they put out, I think they played five of their first team on Saturday because they had absolutely nothing else they could do. I mean, obviously we're in a luckier situation where at least you do have a reason to be successful under 21 team and a few reserves that weren't necessarily going to get in today. But it sounded as though Bradford were very much resting as much as they could on Saturday and they still had to put out five. So for what he's doing under limited resources, I don't think any of the Bradford fans would, you know, I think they all love him.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see him as Reading manager one day, but I want to see some progression from him somewhere else first. I'd like someone else to be the guinea pig. I wouldn't like his next stop to be at Reading. Ideally, I'd like to see, you know, Bradford maybe win promotion, see how he handles it then, or get a move to another club who've got some resource and see if he can play a different style. Because, as I said, they were early jobs for him. You know, if you think about it, he's only been a manager now for about 11 years?
2002,
2003. Yeah, so, you know, there's a chance. As I said, he's a Reading legend. He'll always be one, and we'll see how it pans out. But from talking about classy actions of one man, some very unclassy actions from some, particularly one Bradford fan who's been arrested for directing racist abuse towards Gareth McCleary.
Allegedly
directing racist abuse towards Gareth McCleary. Hoiked out of the ground in pretty swift fashion at half-time, and comments made by Kick It Out, and Bradford have thoroughly condemned the actions and promised to investigate as well. Not much to say on this one, gents, other than it's obviously got no place whatsoever in football, and credit to the Reading stewards for dealing with it swiftly.
Yeah, I mean, I sit on the west stand right in the middle of it, and you could see after it happened, the assistant came over to the fourth official and sort of, you know, was trying to say something, and obviously Gareth was involved as well, and we didn't really know what it was. They assumed a coin had been thrown or some abuse had been directed towards him, but we had no idea specifically what it was. And then obviously putting two and two together after the game, you can be clear that that's what happened. And, you know, having seen, I think BBC sort of did a pan around of McCleary as he's about to take the corner where it happens, and you can see that he's visibly sort of shaken up by something. So I don't think it was just the everyday abuse that you get when you head towards the corner.
I actually picked it out straight away from my vantage point. McCleary went across to get the ball, and the chap actually who's accused of abusing him actually raced down. It was up near the entrance to the concourse, and he actually raced down the steps right to the front and right in front of a steward as well. And he's launched, you could see visually launching a tirade at McCleary. And McCleary's, you know, on the cusp of reacting, you can see that. And the linesman stepped in straight away. You could see that something had been said. And I said to the chap who sits next to me, I can't believe he said anything right next to a steward. Particularly, can't be racist, otherwise he'd be hoiked out there and then. But obviously, the allegation is that it was. It's quite sad, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think the thing was, the stewards, at least it sounds like from their action, that they didn't want to inflame the situation, so they waited until they had a more controlled scenario. You know, similar to what that happened with the Reading fan a couple of weeks ago, obviously completely different situations behind it, but waiting until, you know, they had a bit of a clearer path to get him out safely and quickly at half time. So that might explain any delay. Obviously, the authorities are investigating that, and it remains to be seen, but I say credit if it is being dealt with, and hopefully never gets a seat at a football game again, because that's got absolutely no place in football whatsoever.
Indeed.
And swiftly on to that. On to something that's not anywhere, well, not for me, not quite as serious, but the pitch invasion after the game, which has received a lot of attention in the media. I was listening to TalkSport on the way home from the game yesterday, and it was the only topic of conversation. You'd forget there was an actual football game. It was all about the events afterwards. If you missed it, basically a few Reading fans ran onto the pitch after the game. I'd probably estimate maybe 1,000 or so, about right.
It wasn't too many. No. It certainly wasn't full.
It wasn't the scenes that you saw against Derby or Forest for the promotion celebrations. This was a few over-enthusiastic, largely teenagers, it must be said. A lot of them did run straight over towards the West Stand, as you usually do in those scenarios, but unfortunately, a few decided to just try and wind up the Bradford fans. They stood in front of them, singing and chanting.
And one of them allegedly threw a flare.
Well, it's not allegedly. We don't know who threw it.
We don't know the name of the person.
No, yeah. There was a flare thrown. I saw it with my own eyes. Mm. I see it get thrown in, and the club have appealed. If anyone does know the identity of that person, you can go over to the official Reading website. They've got some pictures of the incident and numbers you can call to identify that fan. Again, so they can follow up on investigation. Please do so. I said throwing it into the away end, absolutely out of order. The only nice thing I can say is, and Tim Deller described it as a thoroughly middle class pitch invasion, which I think summed it up pretty well, because the Reading fans did give the Bradford players the space they needed to go and thank their fans, and a very classy act as well from the Bradford players, I thought, to still take the time. They could have quite easily you know, sulked off and said, oh, well, I'm not going to go through that, but they made their way through the Reading fans and applauded their fans, so credit to them and to the Bradford fans as well, with one notable exception, the thousands that travelled down from Yorkshire for a game that was on TV, a 7:45 kickoff, and getting through horrendous traffic as well. They deserve a lot of applause. But pitch invasion, lads, any thoughts on this other than
well at least we had thoughts? Something to actually invade the pitch for this time, didn't we? Unlike Burnley.
Yeah. Well, did we? Is reaching a semi-final really cause to invade the pitch?
Not really, is it? But, you know, it was always going to happen, wasn't it? Let's face it, first time 88 years, people are going to get over-enthusiastic, and anybody, you know, people will just take the opportunity to get on the pitch in some cases.
I didn't have a problem with the pitch invasion at all, but I wasn't comfortable with the taunts. I think that's really pathetic to go over to the away fans, who, to be honest, apart from the one individual, were magnificent and really got behind their team. You know, it's just disrespectful. But anybody running on the pitch, including my nephew, fine. I don't see a problem. And I didn't particularly want to see a lap of honour. And I'm sure Steve Clark wasn't that keen on a lap of honour either.
Well, they didn't come out in the end, did they?
I mean, I think he would have said, look, we haven't won anything yet. There's no point. Let's just get on with it. Let's get to Wembley and you know, see the pitch there. Yeah. But, yeah, not a problem with it at all. It didn't bother me, but apart from the taunts.
Yeah, as I said, I think if you go over to the West Stand and want to, you know, applaud the director's box or whatever and hope the players pop up there, not my cup of tea for a reach the semi-final, but, you know, as I said, if it's friendly and it's, you know, for little younger kids and stuff as well who like being on the pitch, and fair enough. But as I said, do me a favour, don't go and goad those fans. Those fans are some of the most loyal you'll see. As I said, taking time off on a Monday to travel down to Reading for a game where you're an underwhelming, well, not an underwhelming, sorry, an overwhelming underdog. It takes a lot, and if the situation had been reversed, I'm sure Reading fans would have been up in arms if away fans, if when we were at Valley Parade, Bradford fans had done that. So not really a place, as I said, save for when we've actually won something, and I'm sure there'll be a chance for you to get on the pitch and celebrate if we do win the FA Cup final and we come back for a celebration. Surely the days could be crammed.
Now, there is a precedent. I think the Derby game where we went down a few years ago where we won 4-0, I think the Derby fans came over and taunted our fans that day, and that didn't go down very
Let's
well.
Let's all laugh at Reading. Hello, you've just got 11 points.
Yeah.
Right, well, that just about covers that. I said a couple of thoughts about that coming up in the tweets and emails, but just before we move on, there was one other game last week. Rob, you were there. Reading thrashed 4-1 at Watford. The team obviously very much changed in anticipation of that game on Monday night. Anything to take away from that game whatsoever?
Well, I think Johnny was at the game as well, is that right? And I saw some of Johnny's tweets, and I think we might
angry Johnny made an appearance
a little bit. I think there's quite a lot to say on this, and there's a danger that it might take over the podcast and overshadow the Bradford game. I wasn't as bothered about the reserve team showing, really. I think I do see the point about paying £26 and your travel and all that, but Watford set the prices, so it's a difficult one. I think most of us knew there was going to be a severely weakened team, and given the result on Monday, I think maybe the ends justified the means. So I wasn't too bothered. I mean, it was an extreme set of changes. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, knowing that 11 who started were going to be a different 11 from the one who started on the Monday was really just extraordinary. And you know, letting in a goal in the first minute doesn't help either. I mean, in terms of the performances, I didn't think there were many pluses, but then again, it's very difficult to judge individuals when they're thrown in a team with other players who aren't in the team at the moment. I mean, if you threw Niall Keown or Jack Stacey in with like the full first team, they might play much better. But I really am struggling to think of anybody apart from maybe Jem Carrishan when he came on, who came out of that game with any credit, really. And there certainly wasn't anybody who was thinking, right, I'm going to grasp my spot in the team now.
Yeah, as mentioned, Johnny, you were a bit of an angrier man on Saturday. Well, I mean, what were your thought process? Because you weren't happy at all with that selection.
Oh, I wasn't happy. I didn't think that many changes were necessary. To rest, you know, as you said, the ends justified the means, because I'm not under any
illusions
that the game on Monday night wasn't more important. It certainly was in the context of not only for money, but for the season and for, you know, for the fans' enjoyment. But I think the fact was, it was just a bit of an insult that Steve Clarke made so many changes. And you can say, yes, it's good to see the under-21s come through and play, etc. But I just felt that he made far too many changes. And, okay, look, we had little chance of winning at Watford. But when you saw that team, a load of under-21s, Danny Guthrie, who is unsatisfied at best with his role at Reading at the moment. So he was the only person, by the way, who didn't come over and clap the Reading fans.
What was that night? You saw a debut of an England international playing for Reading.
I actually thought he didn't have a bad game, actually. I thought some of the problems at the back, I actually disagreed really with the player ratings that were on the Tyler end. I can't remember who did that.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Bucks Royal, take a note.
Yeah, but I thought actually Keown and Cooper were both disappointing, albeit against Deeney, who I thought was fantastic, absolutely magnificent player, like a real beast of a player, and Watford really were very good. I thought their movement going forward.
Well, there's a reason there. I think any team would have
struggled, I think, really, against that type of quality. And I came away thinking that 4-1, we got away with it a bit, because I think even though the team was entirely changed, if we'd lost that game 7-0, that's the kind of result that pollutes the atmosphere in a club. and it might have put us back for Monday night. But 4-1, particularly because at 3-1, we had a couple of opportunities where you thought, you never know, we might get back into this. I kind of came away with it thinking, that was fine, that's okay, I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, yeah. And as you mentioned, the one positive, obviously, Cem Karaca'an coming on, recovering from his latest injury setback and scoring a good goal as well. A goal which means he's now scored more league goals this season than Oliver Norwood, Gareth McCleary, Hope Akpan, and Jordan Abita.
I actually thought Hope Akpan had a decent game as well, as he did last Tuesday night against Brighton.
Yeah,
I thought he did okay, actually. Yeah, he certainly seemed to sort of realise he was one of the more senior players in the team and took it on from there. So yeah,
absolutely. I said, well, I don't. In the long run, I don't think anyone's going to lose any sleep over that one. I said a rampant Watford side and Reading team that went on to reach an FA Cup semi-final. So we'll leave that one there. Let's move on to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome to News Bites, where there is only one bit of news to talk about, really, and that is the FA Cup semi-final. I said we've got Arsenal at Wembley. It'll be on April the 18th or April the 19th. The date is yet to be confirmed, but we'll be there. We've got around 31,000 tickets. There is information on both the Tullison.com and the official Reading website. No concrete selling details, but there are some loose details to come. I waited until this point to talk about this game, guys, but I said it is Arsenal in the semi-final. For me, probably the only team in the Premier League eras, the Reading have never got anywhere near, and I'm not entirely optimistic about this one.
We have got somewhere near them.
A 2-1, I think, is the best we did.
They were talking about a 4-0 up and, conceding. Seven.
Against an Arsenal under-21 side. In truth.
I think, Johnny, the 2-1 in the first Premier League season we lost away, I don't think we were ever going to win the game, but we were 2-1 down, and I think Combi might have had a run towards the end, and he thought, well, maybe.
Yeah, Sidwell put one just wide as well, didn't they?
But, I still wake up having nightmares from the 7-5. I mean, that's just a catastrophe. Mm. I think it just turned our season. I mean, it hadn't started that well, but that really was like the turning point where you thought they can just score for fun. And it was players who weren't particularly well liked by the Arsenal fans who were doing some of the damage, people like Chamakh and Arshavin
they were chanting, "We want our Arsenal back," weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So very disappointing. But for me, this game, there is only one tactic we can do, and that is to park the bus. I think we haven't tried to go toe to toe with them before, but we've been fairly attacking, obviously, particularly in that 7-5 defeat. And if teams like Bradford in the past and a few years ago Sheffield United in the league,
Blackburn as well,
and
I think,
if teams like that can get results against Arsenal, if Wigan can take them, I think it was to penalties in last year's semi-final, we have to look at what those teams did to try and achieve that, and we have to just be nasty, getting in their faces, we have to get some tackles in, and we have to kind of defend.
The good thing with that depth, the good thing with that is that there is only one way that Arsenal play, and so there are a few subtle variations of how to play against it. But Arsenal's style formation generally never changes, and so you've got to learn from history and how to at least get near them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they've got one Brian McDermott as their one of their chief scouts nowadays, and considering the budgets of Reading Football Club, most of the players he's going to know an awful lot about. So, realistically, Johnny, do you give us much of a chance?
I don't give us much of a chance, but you've always got a chance, haven't you?
90 minutes, 11-11.
Bradford 4, Chelsea 2. I mean, it's a slightly different occasion, obviously, at Wembley Stadium. But, I mean, you've always got a chance, haven't you?
And who gave Wigan a chance against Man City 2 years ago?
Yeah, very true. As I said, the date is yet to be confirmed, as I've mentioned, maybe once or twice. I'm getting married on the 18th. So, if BT Sport or BBC are listening, do me a solid and make that game on the 19th. Everyone will be happy,
Sunday fun day.
Yeah, it means all the Northern fans can get back in plenty of time on Saturday trains. There you go, I've sold it, surely.
Although they were really considerate for our 12:45 kickoff, weren't they?
Yeah, unfortunately.
And indeed for Arsenal, 7:45 on the Monday night, so.
I don't think they care. I really don't think it crosses their mind. No.
What if I write them a polite letter? Polite letter? No?
Threaten them with death. Yeah, if we always do that.
That might work. Yeah, I don't think that's going to go quite as well.
You probably might not get, actually get to the game after that.
No, I don't think I'll get to the wedding either if I'm suddenly throwing letters out. No, I've no
it's
idea.
It's not important, though, is it?
Well, maybe they've got the TV on in prison. Maybe it'll be all right. So we don't know the date. I said everybody that wants a ticket should get one for the semi-final. I said an allocation of around about 31,000. I think Reading have got maybe, what, 15,000?
My favourite tweet I saw
11 or 12,000.
My favourite tweet I saw today. No word of irony from an Arsenal fan. Why have Reading got 31,000 tickets for the semi final? They only got 20,000 in last night at the Medeski. Come on.
Some people just do not understand football full stop. But no, any serious Reading fan who's attended any number of games over the past, you know, however long since royalty points have been in, should get a ticket. So stay tuned for the website because we'll keep you updated there. One other bit of news before we move on to Pub Chat in the next segment is that next week's Pub Chat will be an interview we have just recorded before the start of this show, an interview with former Reading goalkeeper Simon Shepherd. And covered topics ranging from the time he got a spanner thrown at him by Millwall fans to his coaching career now in the US and how he suffered burnout and what went wrong for him during his 2 years at Reading. So stay tuned for that. That'll be next week's interview. But in the meantime, let's move on to Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. And in honour of his latest Tarlhurst End Podcast appearance, this is a Dave Harris Pub Chat. Dave,
woohoo!
You can introduce the topic for us today.
It is, what is your most enjoyable time supporting Reading Football Club? And by that, quite frankly, is the time that you have enjoyed most while watching Reading Football Club. It is what it is. It does exactly what it says on the tin.
In which case, do you want to get started then? What is your most enjoyable time?
I speak to a lot of people about this over the months and years. And most people tend to go for the 05-06 season. It's fairly obvious. It was a quite wonderful time to watch a Reading team who played fantastic football. But I actually look back and think I enjoyed the 3 to 4 months under McDermott, just after he got the gig full time at Reading. We were playing some wonderful free flowing football, mainly through the best player that I've ever seen play in a Reading shirt, Gylfi Sigurdsson. And we weren't just beating teams in some games. In some games, we were absolutely annihilating them and winning the game within 20 to 30 minutes. I can think of Coventry, I can think of Peterborough, I can think of Bristol City. And it was just such a wonderful time. And on top of that, we had probably, you know, a cup run that, for sure, for sheer raw emotion, was so much better than the one that we've had that we're actually in at the moment, because nobody expected it. Nobody expected us to beat Liverpool in the third round. We then had another Premier League team in Burnley. We had a chance, who we beat. West Brom, we were 2-1 down, sorry, going into the 90th minute. And Brian Howard, praise Brian Howard, his finest moment in a Reading shirt, planting one past Scott Carson to send the away end absolutely mental. You know, there were memories. And I actually think, were it not for a really crap refereeing decision by Graham Salisbury, I think, up at Scunthorpe, when not sending off the Scunthorpe central defender when Makhanov was through on goal and about to shoot, I think we probably would have had made the playoffs that season, and maybe would have gone up, probably not knowing our playoff record. But it was for 3 months of that season, and on the back of given what we had in 2009 at home, you know, with Koppel and then with Rodgers, you know, Rodgers tenure, nobody can turn around and say that it was a success, was it?
Was a year it we was, won something like, was it two home games?
Two home like league games, yes. Oh. Yeah, Watford and
Blackpool,
yeah. It was a season of contrast, and that was just a culmination. It was free-flowing football, not under any pressure. And I think that also brought out the best in Jimmy Kebbe as well.
Yeah. Rob, what about yourself?
Well, it's probably a few candidates. It depends how long you measure the time frame. I mean, I think if you're looking at a really short, say, month-long time frame, I think the period that included the wins away to West Ham and Southampton...
I was going
to
say the same.
would really be hard to beat, because I feel that we were almost robbed of the euphoria at the end of the 2005-06 season, because we knew we were going up from way early, and then we had a fairly flat performance in a 1-1 draw with Leicester that kind of clinched promotion. And Southampton and West Ham, I mean, the sheer madness of celebrating those matches. But there are several candidates, really. I think the period that Simon Shepherd, who I think is going to be on the show in the coming weeks, will speak about, would be very important. I think that I went to about 35 games in the 1993-94 seasons, went to a lot of away games. So for me, if you go to a lot of games, that makes a lot of difference. And then really the first Premier League season, I think that was as enjoyable for me as the 2005-06. I think really, I had an away season ticket, I went to every away game. There were some games where we didn't play very well, like up at Wigan early on, but you know, there were some fantastic performances that season. It was just a complete fairy tale. Seeing the players who had taken us up really prove themselves, at least for a season in the Premier League, was enjoyable. But so many, I mean, the first 13 games in 1985 with Brantford, I mean, that's another one. It could be so many. I mean, we've had a glorious period here, really, compared to most clubs of our size. So I think we should be pretty happy.
If you had to pick one, then?
Well, I'll go for that month. That month with
I'll think of something else in the next 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Johnny, while I'm frantically peddling in the mind.
Well, I think I've got to go for the obvious one, haven't I? The 2005-06 season, the record breakers. I mean, it was just a sensational season after, you have to say, a pretty poor, disappointing first game, and you think, oh, where's this season going? Who'd have thought that by the end of it, you know, we'd be crying out for a Graham Murty penalty on the final day against QPR in order to finally get the 106 and have something to sing when fans say to us, you've got no history, or what have you ever won? It was just an absolute... You said, oh, we can have the FA Cup to that in a couple
as an aside,
of months,
do you think,
hopefully.
As an aside, do you think many away fans clock that chant? Because
I like the...
A lot of fans don't understand what we're singing about.
I mean, I think Bristol City are starting to notice it, but of course it's in the lower division, and you know, they will never be the same, even if they do manage to beat it. But a lot of people don't really care, has to be said.
I like the Simod Cup we won at one time. It's a bit self-deprecating as well, you know.
Yeah, that's another one.
I think there are two, and again, it's something I've mentioned to a lot of people close to me. There are two things about that 05-06 season that really, really frustrate me. And one is that we didn't get 100 goals when we really should have done.
It was 99 in the end,
99 goals. No team has ever actually had 100 points and 100 goals in one season. No. And
Bolton were very close ones, I think.
Yeah, not as close as us. And then the other was that we also didn't have the best defensive record in the division, and that went to Preston, who conceded 12 goals at home all season, and three of those were against us.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
So, Johnny, the 05-06 season for you?
Yeah, it's got to be that for me. I mean, I think that's where the term Fortress Medeski came from. And, I mean, opposition fans, when they came to Reading, must have just thought, what are we up against here? Because you could see the confidence coursing through people's veins. You've got two traditional wingers. Well, one traditional winger, Convey, Hunt, whoever was out there on the wing, Glenn Little, the magician, three strikers, Kitson, Doyle and Lita, who, you know, were all 20-goal season strikers. Who'd have thought that Shane Long would arguably become the best of those strikers, if you like. You've got Graham Murty, the Captain Marvel, Nicky Shorey, future England left-back, Steve Sidwell, James Harper. I mean, you just look through that team and you just think that was an absolutely sensational team that was absolutely unplayable. I mean, I think we lost one other game that season in the middle of February, and the rest of it was just... The best performances I've ever seen from a Reading side. You turned up thinking, well, how many this week? Rather than, we might get a result.
Four league defeats in two seasons, wasn't it? 04, 05, 05, 06.
Mm. Yeah, what is it? And the two teams you lose to, both teams, Luton and Plymouth.
Luton on a Tuesday night.
But I remember the Plymouth game, and my fellow blogger Lloyd is a Plymouth fan. I didn't know him at that point. But I actually came away from that game thinking, well, we played pretty well. I remember Leeds scored a good goal. Doyle looked at cracking signing, you know, for a cut price signing. I thought we came out of it. And I went to Brighton the second game and we were really comfortable winners. And Kitson had a great game. And I thought, we're gonna have a good season here.
Yeah. So, I was lucky enough to witness every single minute of that. And yeah, that Plymouth game came out of it thinking, how the hell have we lost that? They've got away with one there.
Mm-hmm.
The Luton game, I think, you know, in hindsight, we arguably deserved to lose. But having said that, you know, we still stood up. Still did have a couple of decisions that didn't go our way, which they should have done.
Yeah,
but you know, for me, that'd be too bitter.
For me, it's when Long scored on New Year's Eve, wasn't it?
New Year's Eve.
And when Long scored that goal, and I thought, do you know what, we're actually going to do this. The luck's just going our way. We're going to do this. But
I think the one moment that summed it up was, I think we brought on John Halls.
Tyler's then podcast guest, John Halls.
Yeah, what is he? A market seller now, is he?
John Halls, that's John Mackey.
That was John Mackey.
John Halls is a model.
Oh, he's a model, of course.
Really? Yeah, go back and listen to the episode of the podcast.
I think we brought on John Halls, who was a signing.
A model for blind people.
Come on, handsome man.
Yeah, I think we brought on John Halls, possibly against Stoke, who I think we signed him from, and he scored two in that game, and Ulysses De La Cruz running through the middle and scoring, you know, from pretty much a run from 70 yards. And then, you know, every single player in that team scored by the end of it, I think.
Yeah.
De La Cruz was the next season, but yeah.
Was it Chris Makin might have been the only one who didn't?
Chris Makin didn't score. No.
He's the only outfield player who didn't score.
So John Halls actually had a 1-in-2 goal scoring record for Reading.
Did he score in a cup game at Liverpool?
Against Liverpool, yes. Yeah.
I can't say. Do you know what? It's one of my regrets as a Reading fan. I was away at uni in the Northwest between 2004 and 2007. So I had the misfortune of basically missing out on two of the best seasons in our history. So I didn't see as much of those two seasons as I would have liked. Still very fond memories of the games I did see. Although to this day, I'm still incredibly annoyed that I turned up to see Cardiff home game over Christmas, rocked up to the stadium. I didn't have a season ticket, obviously, just thought, I'll just get in. Oh, sorry, we've sold out of tickets. We've sold out of tickets. This is Reading Football Club. I've never had a problem once, and you've sold out of tickets. I just remember anyway, as an aside.
That's one of the best performances of the season. I know.
So I can't say that. I was going to say what Rob said. Those months on the way to promotion in 11-12 were just fantastic, and I went to most of the games of Reading. I even went up to Doncaster on a Tuesday night for the 1-1 draw, and that atmosphere that you mentioned at West, especially West Ham, that bounce after the Gawkes goal and then the Hunt goal.
Yeah, I'm walking out of the room now because I wasn't there.
I think those games gave me more joy than the 05-06 season, but the 05-06 season as a whole
was just
sensational.
The other period as well, my first season was 94-95. It started badly for me. I saw us losing the FA Cup to Oldham. Got better from there. And going all the way to Wembley, I said I was only 8 or 9 at the time, but just remember watching us against. I thought football was easy. Look at this Reading team, they're beating everyone all the time. They're easy. So that was great. But no, I said I would have to go for that 11-12 season. I agree with you, Dave, as well, though. That period under McDermott and some of those performances, seeing Sigurdsson banging home, you know, great free kicks and stuff like that, and the team clicking. Even the following...
a variety of goals, you know. You say great free kicks. He could, the opening goal against Bristol City was a late run header.
He scored the winner at West Brom, didn't he, in the FA Cup?
So right behind. I was speaking to Floyd last night about it, and I said right behind it, and I was celebrating the moment he'd left his foot, and the keeper's not even moving. Don't bother moving. There's a perfectly good net to stop that.
Even the following season, I thought was great. That run to Wembley, again, another cut run, not quite as dramatic, but getting there, winning away at Goodison Park, and getting to the playoffs, obviously smashing Cardiff as well. And again, in a game, especially after the home game, we thought, this is the chance lost. And even Wembley, I know we lost that Wembley final, but the joy and the passion after Matt Mills scores that header, and you just think, we actually might do this. And this is the most joyous moment at Wembley. I was too young to really appreciate the goals against Bolton in 95, but yeah, those moments were great. And as well, the 2000-2001 season, when you had Cureton and Butler smashing teams left, right and centre, was another fantastic period. So obviously ended it in playoff heartbreak again, but yeah, lots to choose from. I'm going to go with Rob, though. I said those months in 11-12, but let us know your thoughts. You can send your tweets into @thetarlhurstend, And the email address is thetarlessend@gmail.com. But now let's move on to that mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, welcome to the mailbag. Thanks very much to those of you who have got in touch. You just heard the contact details there, so I won't bore you with them again. But I will bore you with a plug to subscribe to us on iTunes, because it helps us out. And leave us a review as well. It makes me a little warm and fuzzy inside when we see those little 5-star ratings. Just me? Okay, fine. Right, let's move on. Ben Print says, what formation would you play in the semi-final? 4-5-1? Question mark. Robbie said the only way is to park the bus.
I think that's a great question. I have to say, we had a little bit of a debate about this in the car back from the ground last night. I mean, my initial reaction was that you picked the same team, the team that played yesterday. But of course, you know, you might want to put an extra person in midfield. You might want to put Norwood in there, or Akpan, or someone.
Just, players they did in the first game.
Yeah. I mean, the decision might be made for us by fitness, who's available. There's a lot of water under the bridge between now and then. Who's in form. You know, so I think that's sitting on the fence technically, but I would be tempted to have an extra man, but I think you can play 4-4-2, but just everybody has to stay back, really. You know, the two banks of four, the old Gerard Houllier way, I guess.
Yeah. You know. Dave, what about you? Would you keep faith in the team that won there, or would you go to more of the team that won it? Well, drew, sorry, at Valley Parade?
In most circumstances, I'm very much an advocate of setting your stall out and playing your own way. But there are certain teams in the country, a very small select number of teams, who you actually have to set up for in a specific way. So I'm torn between 4-2-3-1 with the deep line to Chalobah and Williams with... maybe Norwood or even Karachan if he's back up to full fitness.
Yeah, good shout.
Then you've got the and then I'd want deep lying wingers, probably Robson Kanu and McCleary, with Pogrebniak up front. Yakubu, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no place for Mackie then.
Well, yeah. Do you know what? I hadn't even considered him. Yeah, you're throwing a spanner in the works there. if he maintains his form, then he's an absolute shoo-in, in which case you go maybe 4-4-1-1, 4-4-2, and have him slightly more deeper lying to drop into midfield when we don't have the ball, which will be a hell of a lot of the time.
Yeah, very tricky one. Mark Sugar, does the result and performance last night change anything in terms of personnel changes to be made in the summer? Johnny, anyone that's convinced you they deserve a new deal?
Not really. Of, you know, on the face of it, we're playing a League One team. You're expected to win if you're a Championship side that, you know, sort of has any respect for yourself. I mean, I think all the players did well yesterday, and I think you know most of the ones already that you want to offer a new contract to. I think the two that are really up for debate is Chalobah, if he will even come here, if he won't be at
no
a higher
chance.
Level.
No
yeah,
chance.
No. Well, I think he will be at a higher level. And Mackie, as I said, he's had a good month. Can he carry that on? We'll have to wait and see.
I think the only interesting thing about Chalobah, though, is he was at Burnley earlier in the season, didn't really get much of a look in.
No, that's true.
You know, so I wonder whether a Premier League side would take the risk based on that. It might be that he'll end up back in the Championship. He's had a few stints at Championship clubs now, Middlesbrough, Watford, Reading and Forest. So, I mean, I'd love him back on that form. I mean, it was fantastic. But
yeah, I just think that another club would take a punt on him. I think we spoke to some Burnley fans at the time he moved, and he just didn't really fit in with a Sean Dyche style. So
right. Yeah.
I could easily see someone like a Villa, bit more of a state. Well, Villa aren't exactly stable, but you know what I mean, that sort of calibre of mid-table side taking a punt. For me, the only question is the only players that are out there that are pre-contract, that are out of contract in the summer, are Pearce, Gunter and Federici, I think, of the starting lineup, obviously Jamie Mackie as well. I think they'll be doing their best to keep those players, but we've discussed this many times in this podcast, it's whether Reading have got the financial clout to sign them. And I know people are talking about, oh, we've just made a load of money, but when you're talking 20, 30 grand a week, you know, that takes up most of your prize money on one contract. Mm-hmm. So it remains to be seen. Right, moving on. This one for you, Johnny. I know this will get you talking. This one comes from Raw Hoops. This is an editor on the site. He says, thoughts on the new wicked cool mega DJ at the Mad Stad? Totally rad or awfully bad? Don't, Johnny, you'll hurt yourself.
That was the sound of my head hitting the table. Absolutely awful. Absolutely abysmal. the new DJ.
The worst thing he's done, and I can almost forgive all the child disco style tactics before the game, was playing music for a pitch invader.
It was Nella the Elephant, though. It was kind of apt, wasn't it?
But surely you're just... don't get me wrong, it was funny, but in all seriousness,
that condones what... says that we, as a club and a PA...
find this funny.
...condone exactly what this pitch invader has done. You know, it may have been funny, but as a club, as an official statement, you cannot afford to do that. The thing that annoyed me the most about this new DJ, the way he reads out the team... I don't want a puzzle. I don't want a top of the pop style announcement of the top 22 players that are playing the team. I want to know number one, Adam Federici. Number two, Chris Gunter. Not in a number one is Adam Federici. The number two shirt will be worn today by Chris Gunter. My cogs are whirring in my head as I'm trying to work out what bloody players are playing. It's absolutely your, and they've got music playing underneath it as well. So yeah. You can't even hear what he's saying. There's an air raid siren just before kickoff.
I don't know.
Which is a sign to get out rather than stay in.
I don't know if it's this guy as well who's controlling it, but the cues for the goals and the music and stuff was all over the place.
They started playing Don't Stop Me Now at some point as well.
Deary me. Guys, obviously Johnny's made his opinion fairly clear. Any strong opinions from either of you?
Actually, I've got a small thing that's really annoyed me. It's not actually connected to this DJ, and I think it's a bit disrespectful to the away team, is that they tend to announce the away team before the players have come out.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
And it happens at away grounds as well.
Yeah.
And then, to great fanfare, they announce the home team when the players have all come out. And as an away fan, that's really frustrating. You really want to hear, if you've arrived quite late to the ground, you want to hear the away team immediately after the home team. So I think that's a bit disrespectful. But yeah, I'm with Johnny 100%. And dare I say it, not a huge... I mean, I hate music after goals. Absolutely hate it. You know, there's no place for it in football, and the whole Sweet Caroline thing, I just don't know where that's come from. I don't know what
Glenn Little.
I don't know what the connection is to Reading, though. It's just, I'd rather
it's just the, it's just the 05-06 season, yeah. Isn't it? There was a story apparently Glenn Little, Chris Makin, and a few other players were in Malaga after we won the league, and basically got booted out having sung that far too loud.
Really? Well, that's fair enough, but I'd rather have, you know, Violet Class, or, you know, the people who do
music
for
the Royals anthem.
The Royals
anthem.
Yeah, the Royals anthem. I just find it embarrassing.
Yeah, DJ Mega Party, as I've taken to calling him. I'm not his biggest fan, but let's give him some slack. He's clearly new to it.
He's trying too hard.
Yeah, exactly.
The club are trying far too hard. The whole Sweet Caroline thing, we're going back to that, is they are, you know, really, really ragging the arse out of that.
If you want to
sort of try shoving an anthem down fans' throats, play it as, you know, as just before or while the players come out, and play it at the end of the game. Don't use it as flipping goal music, which is, you know, even Chase the Sun had gone too far. I know when we first got Tom Ark in 03-04, it was on the back of a number of clubs having it for 5 years. Just stop trying so bloody hard, please, and just do the basics right, and then the rest will come.
I have to say, I broadly agree with everything you're saying. I think things should be, and John Keane has said it before, it should be organic from the club, from the fans. But I did think that when fans all did get into the spirit of Sweet Caroline last night, it was good, and it did sound good. But the only thing I'm going to say to the football club is stick with it. Make a choice and stick with it. Don't do what you did in the summer. Have a vote for your club anthem, and then 6 months down the line, think, oh, actually, this isn't going down well, let's change it. It takes time for anthems to be adopted by football clubs. Give it time, keep playing it, and fans will then associate it with the football club. They won't just think, the club want me to sing this. I think, oh, I hear that every week at Reading. And then I hear this more than any other pop song. Oh, I've been hearing this song for 5 years. And then things happen, so... Yeah, anyway, that's probably a pub chat topic in itself, really. Right, so I hope we've answered your question there, Steve. Right, Talk Reading wants us to address the key issue of my quote earlier about naming an award after Hal Robson-Kanuvi got us to Wembley. I'll tackle that later in the show. My Left Port says, also wants to know, is this the Hal Robson-Kanuvi tribute podcast? in light of his getting us to Wembley. Again, I'll say my thoughts on how Robson can do for the end. Chris Baker says that my thoughts that Reading is a great club to support lately, always find something to play for, whether on a league or cup run. Bobby Hall says, as I'd be coming over from Norway, do I gamble and hold out for the final or take the day at Wembley for semis? Been thinking about it literally all day. Can't afford both and have no idea what to do. Advice?
Why is he even thinking about it all day? It should only take a second to think.
Semi-final. Yeah. Go to the game, we're guaranteed.
We have a chance. Not a very big chance, but we do have a chance of getting through. Mm.
What you do is you go to the game, and then if you think you're going to get to the final, you stick a load of money on Reading to win. Therefore, if Reading do make the final, you've got your ticket money. Or Reading lose and you've spent a load of money you don't have. Hashtag gamble aware. But no, Bobby, come over for the semi-final. You the chance of Reading making a final, yeah, they've got a chance, but they're not. It's not a massive chance, and you go to the game, you're guaranteed. So get on over for that weekend in April. Joe Stevenson, if you had to guess now, how many players from last night's squad do you think will start next season's opener? I've had this a few times, but we'll rattle through the team quickly and have a straw poll, yes or no. Adam Federici.
Yep.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
Chris Gunter.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
Michael Hector?
Yep.
Yeah.
Alex Pearce?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no. I don't think they'll renew his deal.
Yes.
Who else have we got? We've got Jordan Abita.
Yes.
Yeah.
He might go.
Big club, I suppose, but I don't think he's set the world alight enough to really
want
a massive move this season. Really.
Yeah. Nathaniel Shalaba?
No.
I'd like to get him back, but no.
Yeah.
Danny Williams?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Jamie Mackey.
I think we might try and get him, so I'd stick my neck out and say yes.
I think it's going to be a Ledgerwood type situation where they find the money somewhere to
sign. I think it's going to be difficult if he gets voted player of the season. He'll certainly be up there.
Mm, yeah.
Even after just a month of good performances.
Mm.
Yeah, Dave.
We'll try and sign him, so I'll stick my neck out and say yeah, we'll get him.
Hal Robson-Cano.
Yep.
I think he might have moved on.
Yeah.
I'm also he's not out of contract now.
Mm. His time has come. I think if we can get a buyer for him, I think he'll be off.
Yeah, agreed. Pavel Pogrebniak?
Yeah. No one's going to take him.
Yeah. I think he'll be here. Unless he wants to move. And he said before he's very happy with his not so, shall we say, not small wages.
Yeah. I think given the geopolitical situation in Russia, you never know. I think he might be off, you know,
really?
For various reasons. Yeah, yeah. I think it might be one of those ones where I think a rational club would take him. I think
his brother or something plays for. I want to say his brother plays for Spartak.
Mm. His brother plays football.
Yeah, because there was an interview with him, and they were quite. He said, "Oh, do you want to come back and play with your brother?" Mm. And I think he said basically, "Well, I want good money, and the family is settled here."
Vladimir Putin went missing for a few days. Do you reckon he went trying to find Anton?
Yeah. Well. He knows. Thoughts to at the Tarlos.
Does Anton even exist?
His missus certainly does.
He's not quite Ali Al-Faraj from Portsmouth, but...
anyway, probably had about the same impact on the football club.
My answer to that, by the way, is no. I think Pogrebniak will go.
No, I think he'll be here. I don't think I was going to take him. And one I missed from the midfield, Gareth McCleary. Probably, certainly come into the season, our most saleable asset.
He put it in on the TV last night, as did Chaloba.
I didn't think McCleary had that good a game. I thought he'd scored a decent goal, but I thought he wasted a couple of other chances and his crossing wasn't brilliant. I don't think he had a bad game. I didn't think he was. I still don't think we've seen the best of Gareth McCleary this season.
No.
So what do you think? Is he going to be here?
No.
I think someone will take him off our hands. Yeah, I think so. I think a team who's got more pretensions to being promoted from this division next year will get him, I think.
I think we'll do our absolute best to keep him. If he finds some really decent form between now and the end of the season, then if a club comes in at the right price, we'll let him go. It's got to be, you know, £4 million, £4.5 million though for us to sell him, I think.
Yeah, very quickly.
Having said that, how long has he got on his contract?
He just signed a new one, didn't he?
Of course he did, yes.
Yeah, a new 3-year deal, so he's not going to go cheap, whatever happens. Very quickly, running through the bench, so Mikael Anderson, out of contract in the summer.
No, I think he'll move on.
No.
He's got to move on to progress his career, hasn't he?
Unless he signs and Federer goes.
Unless Federer goes, yeah.
I thought his kicking was suspect on Saturday, actually. Yeah, I thought it was a bit disappointing with the ball being played back to him.
Good shot stopper, though. Another in a long line of good running shot stoppers, I think. Right, who else? We've got Stephen Kelly. I can't even remember who was on the bench yesterday, but I'll say him anyway. Stephen Kelly.
He won't be here.
No, he won't.
He's out of contract, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Jake Cooper.
Yeah,
he'll be here.
Jem Karrasan.
Yeah.
How long has he got left to run on his contract?
It's this summer. They've got an option, but I imagine it's a lucrative option.
I think they'll give him another go.
I think Reading will make an offer, but we discussed this on the podcast section with Charles the other week. I don't think Reading can afford to make a massive offer unless he puts in a really strong 7 or 8 games.
I think they might offer him a contract and say, if you don't take this, we're going to extend you by a year anyway.
Well, no, because what I think is I imagine this extension is on the similar terms he's on now. And given this contract was signed just after promotion to the Premier League, and we know Anton was rather keen to throw the money around, I don't think this is a particularly club-friendly deal at the moment, especially for a championship.
But he's your club captain, and if you've got the option.
It will mean nothing.
Didn't mean anything for Joby Mackenough for the end of last season.
Do you know what? I think I'm thinking back to the fans forum. I didn't attend it myself, but a couple of people have said that Clark did continually stress the phrase "players on Premiership wages" element, and it's absolutely definitely planning a clear out. It's going to be some surprising names going, and I wouldn't be surprised if Jem Karrasan was one of them. I mean, Clark's barely had the opportunity to look at him through no fault of Karachan's at all. He has been injured, recovering from injury. It's a long time to recover from a crucial ligament injury, though, isn't it? I mean, 18 months is a long-term injury, but 18 months is three times as long as the regular cruciates now. I wouldn't be surprised if Karrasan went.
No, I agree. Who else do we have on the bench? Nick Blackman, everyone's favourite player.
He'll go. Not done it enough at championship level. I think Clark will be looking.
What's his contract situation?
I think he's got another year.
Yeah, I think he'll probably still be with the club.
Yeah, he'll be here.
So I think you take a buyer, but I don't know if anyone's going to buy him. We also have Yakubu. Anything?
No,
he's useless.
he will always be fondly remembered for getting us into the quarterfinals, though. He's had his Roy Essendoe moment.
He was lumbering around like a primeval monster at Watford. It was just nothing.
I don't think he jobbed once.
No.
It was abysmal.
Even at full time to get back into change rooms.
Yeah.
I can't really remember it anyway. So he was on the back. Oh, Oliver Norwood.
Yeah, he'll be here.
Yes, yeah. He's early in his contract, isn't he? So.
Yeah. Of all the players under Steve Clarke, he's probably had the biggest regression and the hardest time. Because Chalobah's come in and has effectively slashed his playing time. I think, certainly in the first, I think he won our Player of the Month award, voted by the fans, 3 times, I think, in the first half of the season.
Mm. I think Charles Watts made a good point the other week, though, on your Tireless End Pod Extra, where he was saying that he was dropped after he'd had a very, very good game away to Cardiff in the Cup. And I think it might have knocked his confidence a bit. But that said, I think what really struck me about last night was how well we kept the ball. Most of the players, I think Chalobah in particular, was the master of that. And, you know, I think at times Norwood, particularly in the away game up at Bradford, admittedly on a diabolical pitch, did give the ball away quite a lot. And we just can't afford that. You know, we've got to keep hold of the ball. So, yeah.
Right, and that just about runs through the squad. I can't think, if I've missed anyone off the bench, I apologise. But obviously they're not right at the forefront of my memory. Right.
Simon Cox.
I think he'll. Well, actually, he said that. Clark's already binned him off once before.
He'll still be here.
Yeah, he probably will still be here, yeah.
Yeah. Right, so that covers that one. Ben Nicholson, similar question. Who/how many would you discard in the summer to free enough wages for Clark to play with? I think we sort of covered it there. Most of the people, you know, you want to build around. But as I said, anybody who's out of contract this season, I don't think. I'd say you're 50-50 at best to keep them. And I think that includes the biggest names, the Federicis and the Pierces of this world, because I think they will be offered terms dramatically under what they're on. And there'll be an ego thing with players. Not saying that the likes of Federici and Pierce have got massive egos, but there will be a thing where suddenly you get a contract pushed across the table that's, say, maybe 30, 40% less than what you're on. There's going to be a pride thing. It would be the same in any job. They'd think, well, hold on a minute, I've been one of your best players this season and suddenly you're cutting my wages.
Well, wasn't it Alex Pearce who was out of contract three or four years ago, tried to see if the grass was greener, and eventually signed a deal with us again. So
like Ross and Cano as well.
But again, that was a case of though the club in the end did throw big money at them because they wanted to get back in the Premier League.
But no one else would.
I don't know what they were prepared to offer them. Again, it's like Pogrebniak as well. It's not that Pogrebniak didn't have other offers. It's that Reading blew every other team out of the water. So, again, I don't know the financial situations, but it'll be interesting to see. And finally, Sir Scoop-A-Lot. The pitch invasion ruined what was an incredible night for the Royals. It's all it'll be talked about.
Sir Scoop-A-Lot.
Yeah. There you go. And yeah, I think we've covered that. Just finally going back then to the Hal Robson Canoe tweets. I did, as mentioned, tweet that I would name a positive award for Hal Robson Canoe if he did get us to Wembley. Do you think he did enough? Do you think he got us to Wembley? Or do you think he can maintain his underachieving player?
Well, not single-handedly, but I think he had a good game all round, and obviously it was a great header and a good boost, so credit where credit's due.
If we were to name an award after Harry Robson Canoe, a positive award, what would it be?
The Sweet FA Award?
The Sweet FA Award.
Sweet FA
Award. Possibly It's Been a Long Time Coming Award. There you go. In fact, I'm going to do it. The It's Been a Long Time Coming Award, where a player that we have waited and waited and waited for finally puts in a good... So, in a way to most improve, similar along those lines. So a player that we've thought for a long time could come good and did come good. So there you go. Note that down in your diaries for the Christmas edition of the show this year. And that just about wraps up the mailbag. We'll move on to a couple of bits of any other business and then we're out of here.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. It's back to the Championship now, fellas. We've had our moment of cup glory for the next month, and now we've just got to get back to the business of the Championship. And after that result on Saturday and Wigan's win as well, it's not cut and dry. We're not quite there yet. 10 points is the gap with what, 9 games to go, but they've got to pick up some points, because the last thing you want is to have to pick up points right around that time of the semi-final. You know, you want to get this done, and going to Charlton presents a good chance to get some points, because they're a team that aren't in tremendous form themselves. Dave, how do you see this one going?
You say they're not in a tremendous form. They've won a few recently.
They've won five of the last seven, but not as in.
Now, since they changed their manager, isn't it? It's not going to be an easy game. Massive cliche. There never is in the Championship. I haven't even seen Charlton play since they changed their manager, so I don't know how they line up, how they. What their style of play is or anything like that. We've got the ability to win there. It's not a particularly happy hunting ground over the years for Reading. I think we've only ever won there 2 or 3 times. Obviously, we beat them there last time. A difficult one to call. I'll take a point, as you would do with any away.
Rob, what do you do with the team? Do you give that team that won against Bradford the run out, or do you rest them? Because this is the first, I think we're going into next week will be the first time we haven't had a midweek game for a long, long time. So do you trot them out again, or do you say you've got basically 2 weeks off now?
No, you absolutely play the same team. I mean, momentum, I mean, we've got a good chance. I mean, the confidence last night was fantastic. We were energetic. We were like committed. I'd love to see the team out there again. I'd love to see him think, right, this is my team. Come all hell high water, this is the one I'm going to pick, and I'm going to stick with it, and only bring other players in if there are injuries. So yeah, I think we've really got to be positive. Absolutely, I'd definitely pick the same team, particularly without a midweek game next week. So,
Johnny, yeah. I'd see this one panning out.
I mean, they did a bit of a professional job on us in the first leg, if you like, when they came here and won 1-0. I mean, I think there'll be a difficult side to break down. I think, you know, even though they will be at home, they'll still keep it tight, and as you say, I mean, they've been in decent enough form in the last few games, and they're on a high. And you have to say that even though we are in the FA Cup, you know, in the semi-final, our league form hasn't been the greatest. You know, we were very good away from home under Steve Clarke, and then a 3-0 defeat up at Huddersfield happened, and you sort of thought, well, maybe we're not actually quite so good away from home. But you know, I think we're sort of set up for that mentality away from home. Just a live news flash. Charlton won 3-0 at Blackpool on Tuesday night, and Simon Church scored the second.
No, Simon Church scored.
Yeah,
Simon Blackpool Church. Must be bad.
Well, I think we know they're bad.
Right, well, there you go. There you have it. Live as we record this. We've just what
6 from 8 then now, is it?
Yeah. Okay, so I take it back. But apparently, well, okay, they're in better form than I thought. What I meant to say is
one of those defeats against Derby.
Yeah, well, a mid-table side that haven't got a lot to play for. Put it that way. Looking at their team that played against Blackburn on Saturday, as the aforementioned Simon Church, also got another former Royal Landro Beaky who kept us completely quiet at the Mad Sad earlier in the season.
He was sensational.
Yeah,
he was, with him and Tel Ben Haim. And Chris Eagles is a player I've always liked as well. He's knocking around their squad. So.
The player I like is Goodmanson, actually. I think he looked really good in the game at the Madstad. And he's the sort of player I wouldn't mind us having if it weren't for the fact that we're pretty strong in right midfield at the moment. But he's really tidy, I think. And scores goals as well.
Yeah. Right. Prediction time then. No Westy here, which is a shame because Westy actually got the Watford score spot on. Predicted a 4-1 win and got it. Narrowly robbing Charles Watts of a first correct score prediction in since penicillin was invented. we all correctly predicted a Watford win, so that's 1 point for me, Johnny and Charles. And I said Westy got 3 points to nudge a little bit close to leaders. But Johnny, it's just me and you tonight. I'll text Westy to get his prediction ahead of the weekend. But how are you seeing this one going?
I want to say that we'll carry the momentum through, but I mean, you have to say that their momentum in the league is something else at the moment. I think sadly I think sadly we'll go down probably 2-1. We'll go down fighting.
2-1.
Unlike Watford last weekend.
I'm gonna say that Reading will surprise us and they will graft out a 2-1 win. So there you go. Gents, just for fun then, how do you see this one going?
I'm with you actually, Dan. I think 2-1 to us.
Yeah. Dave?
I'll go 1-1.
Go for one, right.
Go the jackpot draw.
Excellent. Right. That just about wraps up the show. Nothing really to talk about. I said we're all off to Wembley, hopefully. Again, BT Sport and BBC Sport, you know what decision makes sense. The April 19th campaign continues. Thanks very much, Dave and Rob, for joining us.
Cheers. Yeah.
No worries.
Certainly replace Westy. He's got up his game when he comes back next week.
Yes, indeed.
I'll be sitting down with Charles on Friday to look ahead to that Charlton game in a bit more detail and hopefully have a few more updates on tickets and whatnot and the unfortunate instance as well around that Bradford game. As mentioned again earlier in the show, the club are appealing for witnesses to a couple of incidents there. So head over to the official website for more details on that and if you can help catch them. Or not even catch them, but you know. Help with the investigation. That would be very, very helpful. That wraps it up. I said, enjoy this week, guys. But we've made Wembley and a lot to look forward to. And as I mentioned on the show next week, we'll be speaking to Simon Shepherd. So stay tuned for that show as well. But all that means to be said is, come on, you arse. And here's 3 points on Saturday. It's funny how the crowd's always been betrayed.